Chapter 20. The grass gave way to low, rocky ground. This was the area that led to the western edge of the world map, a tall, impassable mountain range that was called the Spit. Boulders and crevices dotted the barren landscape. Just to the south of here was a desert area, and to the north was a lake, the area of the Dagon water breathers. Creatures that appeared to be cat-sized crosses between armadillos and scorpions scattered as we approached. Most had green indicators over them, though some of the bigger ones were yellow. They did not approach or attack us thanks to Clara's friend skill. Banksy snatched a few up here and there, and they each gave a small amount of experience and soul power.
Stop!
Her silence spell had fizzled out a minute earlier, but she kept running. Jesus, she's lost it.
Stop! It's not safe here!
The sky, which had been clear of demons while we were near Orthrus, was becoming populated by distant, for now, swooping and screeching demons. Even at this distance, I could discern the red warning markers over their heads. If we were spotted out in the open like this, that Canadian dude would be the least of our worries. The entrance to the groundling village was still a good mile away. Sparse vegetation dotted the rocky ground. The scattered trees were gnarled and stooped, barely enough cover.
Stop! Banksy, come on.
I grabbed Clara by the arm and dragged her to the closest tree.
I do not like this ground. It is not good for burrowing.
I pulled Clara down to the rough dirt at the base of the small tree. The bark pulsated, as if the tree was alive. I hoped not, remembering the Wendigo monsters.
That was Olga, the frog. She's always near her master. So if Olga saw us, then Cenk will know we're here. He's going to find us. This world isn't that big. We never should have left Bast. It's not worth it. It's not.
It said he's offline. For all you know, he's been offline for weeks. He's probably in jail right now.
No. He's not in jail. I can feel it.
Even though I didn't understand why she felt that way about the man, I respected it. The panic in her words was terrible. Familiar.
This is too much. This is too much.
Okay. We gotta keep moving. We'll move from tree to tree, and only when the sky is clear.
Clara had said earlier the man wasn't like Smash South. This guy played the game. He leveled up. He'd even beat the game once before. He knew what he was doing. So on the off chance he was still here, we had to stay away from him at all costs. Looking at my map, I wondered if he'd be able to discern where we were going. There weren't too many active towns and villages outside of Medina, but there were enough that searching each of them would be a pain. There were a couple other villages we could be headed toward, along with a few quest locations and points of interest. Our destination of Kinnegad was only obvious if one knew what our plan was. I hoped. It was pushing midnight by the time we arrived at the entrance to the underground village of the Groundlings. We jumped from tree to tree, only moving when a demon flock wasn't near. Large, rhinoceros-sized monsters patrolled the area, all with blazing red warning markers over their heads. These demons roared and moved slowly, picking their way across the rocky ground. I watched one launch a beach ball-sized fireball from its maw at an unseen creature 100 meters away. The ground exploded at the point of impact, showering rocks and dust. We had to keep low to avoid them. It was easier to move once it became dark. The gnarled trees unfurled and swayed in the darkness, becoming much bigger. The tops glowed red, giving the night a blood hue. I was afraid the trees would attack or thrash at us with their limbs, but they didn't. The entrance to the village was easy to find with the map. We passed around the corner of a nondescript outcropping, revealing a large cave. We took two steps in, and the notification came.
Entering Kinnegad.
This was a low, wet cave that angled downward. The passage was about 10 feet wide, but I had to stoop to make it through. The temperature dropped a few degrees every 100 feet we traveled. Rough-hewn stairs appeared on the floor. A sickly green light filled the cave. The illumination came from clumps of lichen-like growths that gathered in the corners of the ceiling and the walls. The result was something akin to starlight on the night of a new moon. It was very dark, but I could still see the walls and floor enough that I wouldn't trip. I hoped the village itself wasn't this dark. Do you hear anything? How far down is the village?
Who goes there? Show yourself or you get the sticker.
Well, easy, boy. It's okay. We're friends.
I'll be the judge of that, mate.
A yellow spotlight cut through the darkness from above. I looked up, startled at the defensive nest nestled against the high wall. Just a few feet back, the ceiling had been right over my head. I hadn't realized we'd entered into a larger room. I stood to my full height.
My name is Duke, and my friends are Clara and Banksy. We're seeking the temporary refuge of Kinnegad.
I shielded my eyes and looked about, getting a better sense of my surroundings. The tight cave we'd been in had opened up into a large chamber. The wide stairs continued downward with no railing on either side, spanning over a deep drop. A slip, and we'd fall into the unseen depths. The downward bridge of stairs crossed about 100 meters before it entered another cave further below. On the walls all around us were defensive pockets. There were about a dozen of them at various heights. Unlike the village of Charnel, the defenses here appeared to be fully manned. Large, hand-cranked guns trained on us from some of the bubbles. Groundlings with bulky crossbows and blunderbuss-like guns with flared muzzles filled the other nests. They glared down upon us with black, beady eyes. A large set of clockwork gears filled the far wall. It had been sitting silent or dormant. With a burst of steam, they started ticking. More light flickered on, filling the chamber. The mayor of Charnel had said groundlings used celestial magic, but I knew they also had to have a second magic school. I take it these guys use steam magic?
Yes, but don't let all these gears and engines fool you. They favor the celestial way more than the steam. They're crazy religious. They worship their kaiju like a god.
Great. Paladin dwarves. We stepped back as a brass, robotic arm appeared, coming from underneath the stairway bridge. A rush of steam appeared, blasting sideways. A second robotic arm appeared, and then a something emerged from under the walkway. The steampunk mech pulled itself onto the stairwell. It wasn't huge by mech standards, but the round, brass robot stood about 8 feet tall, just a bit larger than Smash South, the nerve agent. It consisted of two squat legs that appeared as if they could alternate between walking and rolling on treads, and two orangutan-like arms that lowered to the ground. The body was perfectly round, a clockwork gyro of spinning gears. A pair of brass tanks were attached to the back of the mechanism, each spewing random bursts of steam. Centered in the gyro, strapped in with a mess of tubes and leather bands, was a groundling. Floating over her head was her title.
Madam Throb, Mechanized Sentry Leader of the Protectorate Templar, Level 26.
The woman, Madam Throb, glared at us angrily. I'd only seen a groundling in passing before. These creatures weren't like the dwarves of lore, but it was the closest description. Mole men were much more like the squat, bulky creatures of fantasy. Groundlings had human-sized torsos, only a bit wider. It was their short legs that gave them their squat appearance. They didn't have visible necks at all, just large, moon-faced heads planted right on their torsos, giving them an oddly stupid appearance. While the women wore their hair long, the men all had friar-like bowl cuts, which didn't help them look any more intelligent. It seemed their arms mirrored that of the mech, extra long. They seemed chimpanzee-like, and I wondered if they could swing through trees. The mech raised its arm, pointing it at me. A long, white spike appeared out of the brass finger of the mech. Sharp and thin, like a pale kebab skewer, it grew until it stopped right at my neck. I raised my hands, standing perfectly still.
How'd you find this place?
I have a magic map. She nodded. The motion was odd, given her lack of an outward neck. The whole mech shuddered with the motion, and the skewer at my throat came perilously close to scratching its way up and down my flesh.
I would expect you ghouls to have unholy tricks like that.
Peel it! Don't let it in.
The only thing less trustworthy than a ghoul is a gremlin.
Throb pushed the spike harder against my throat. It thrummed against my skin like it was attached to an engine. I took a step back. She walked with me, each step a metallic hiss. Banksy pressed against my leg, shuddering.
Father, I do not like this metallic thing, but say the word and I will devour it. All living things are wet on the inside.
Calm, Banksy. My charm was only an 8, and until this moment, I hadn't really thought much about the stat. It had never seemed necessary. I was now regretting neglecting it. I had no idea what Clara's charm was, but it had to be higher than mine. I gave Clara a pleading look. She blinked, and the look on her face completely changed. She went from a scared girl to a self-assured person in charge. Just like that. The new look on her exasperated face said, "For Christ's sakes, do I have to do everything?"
I would guess that the demons are the least trustworthy. They're the ones killing everybody, invading our world.
Kill them! They are unclean! They threaten us and our souls!
Amplify the ghoul!
We are trying to save Medina from the demon threat.
Clara swatted at the skewer at my throat. It did not move.
That's who you need to fear. Fae, groundlings, worm surgeons, we all share the same ancestors. It's the demons who are trying to kill us. Duke here is a worm surgeon, tasked with healing the shrill. Once the guardian is fixed up, the kaiju can attack the threat head on, finally aiding in the defense of the realm. We are here for a reason, damn it! And if you stop us, you are effectively killing us all.
This is a ghoul. He's one step above a demon himself. He serves the shrill, who is nothing more than another demon. An abomination who does not deserve to share the same light as Moritazgus.
Like it or not, the shrill is a guardian. It has fought and continues to fight for this world's freedom. Duke here is a worm surgeon, yes. Yes, he smells really bad. Yes, he's uglier than a scarab grub that's been chewed up and spat out. But he's still of the same blood as you and me. Look at him. He's not exactly a threat. He's no match for your mechanized Templar infantry. Also, Banksy here trusts him, so there's that.
That garnered a reaction. Throb recalled the skewer back into her hand, lowering it. Steam hissed out of the back of the mech, and the whole thing seemed to relax. She looked down at my worm.
Do you trust this ghoul?
Banksy looked back and forth between the armored sentry and me.
He's my father.
This was the opposite of what had happened when we entered Charnel. The worm surgeons did not trust my hook slayer. Here, they held him in higher esteem than they did me.
Very well. You may enter the outer circle of Kinnegad, but not the residence or sheriff's seat or any of the barracks or armories. And if you set foot near the temple, you will be killed immediately. This is not negotiable. You may visit the merchants. There's an inn for sleeping. If your unholy kind sleeps. All right.
She whispered into a microphone-like device on her shoulder.
Don't worry.
She looked back up at us.
You won't even notice. You will be watched at all times. Do not cause trouble, and you will remain tolerated, if not welcome. Follow me.
She turned and stomped down the stairs, causing the whole bridge to waver ominously. The twin brass tanks on the back of her mech were each adorned with the likeness of a badger. We hurried after her. Good job. What is your charm?
I just said the first thing that came to me. My charm is 11. Not great. You were just unlucky. Like that one lady said before, celestial magic users don't like resurrection users like yourself too much.
They seem to hate shade gremlins more than worm surgeons.
Yeah, I don't know what's up with that. If I remember the spell cycle correctly, they're actually supposed to be enemies with the leechers. Everyone hates someone and gets along fine with someone else. There is a whole complicated circle of relationships. Your main enemy is the Radiants. For my kind, it's the Midwives. I thought the enemy of the Groundlings was the Leechers, but I guess it's the Shade Gremlins.
We followed Throb through a short passage into a bustling underground cavern. The well-lit cave went on as far as I could see. The ceiling stood about 15 feet over my head, but the ground descended in a massive bowl shape, like we'd entered a stadium at the top level. This place was significantly bigger than Charnel, much larger than I'd expected. Despite it being the middle of the night, the town was alive and thriving. Pipes snaked the walls and ceilings, and a constant thrum, thrum, thrum filled the air, the sound of a steam engine somewhere below, keeping the lights on. I could feel the engine in the ground, pounding. Hundreds of groundlings were about, moving every which direction. Soda can-shaped buildings, running from floor to ceiling, dotted the downward angled floor. Metallic cobblestones indicated the main thoroughfares. The town stank, almost as bad as the interior of Bast. But this was a different smell, musty, like uncleaned cages from a barn. Added to that was an electric smell, too, like that of burned wires from an overloaded circuit. Almost every creature was a groundling, but I did catch sight of a couple others. A Physicker skulked through the streets. He or she was a tall, hunched-over humanoid with no features on its pale face other than a pair of slits for eyes. It wore long, flowing, wide robes and seemed to float instead of walk. The creatures reminded me of Japanese anime ghosts with their expressionless faces. Clara said they were steam and wind-based.
There was a woman they brought in here, a consumable. She was a poet. She chose a Physicker when they pulled her in. Smash South used her at first, but then Frank had her. They look human on the outside, but when you open them up, they're all sawdust with clockwork parts. Kind of like those steampunk robot guys, the Menders. Frank didn't like that at all. They got him someone else. This time, a goat-headed viceroy. I think that's one of the reasons why he went back to hunting in the real world. Frank is like Smash South. He wants to play with humans, not any of these weird creatures. Anatoly didn't program out the races fast enough for him. Plus, Frank's whole thing requires multiple victims, and that wasn't possible the way this is set up. With only 22 spots, it gets full pretty fast. So, Frank had to be supplemented with NPC body parts. The poet lady was then traded off the princess who'd been waiting for someone, and even she wasn't happy with the consumable.
Huh. It seemed like a simple enough problem, making it so multiples of a single race were allowed. But I had the impression the co-op version of this game was built around the whole endgame scenario, which was all about getting the various kaiju to fight together. That wouldn't work if everyone were human. At the center of the cavern was what I assumed to be the Temple of Mortazgus, their guardian. The temple was oddly shaped, like a massive brass badger head with heavy rivets all up and down the building. The badger head was the size of a church in the real world. Hell, it was probably the size of the actual kaiju's head. Its open mouth beckoned worshippers within. A stream of robed groundlings exited the mouth and wandered onto the streets. It appeared a service just ended. We need to find a flesh modder. Groundlings glared at us from open doorways. The streets became more crowded as the worshippers returning from the Badger Church reached the outer points of town. But first we need to find a place to sell a couple potions. Also, I was hoping to buy a pet carrier. We only had 325 teeth, and I suspected that it wasn't nearly enough. We had 4 of the Extract of Colocolomensis potions we'd received from Stolas the Owl Demon. If we could sell just one of them, I suspected we'd have enough to buy whatever upgrades and brands we needed. The mech pointed at a pair of tin can buildings further down the street.
There is a flesh modder available at the upgrade center. The building will soon open. The proprietor is the most pious and attend the evening services. Right next door is the apothecary. You may be willing to look at your potions. We do not have a pet shop in Kinnegad. You'll have to find one elsewhere.
What about a transport gazebo? If they had a working one, we could at least zap ourselves to Medina.
We have a gazebo, but it's out of order. We are seeking a quantum mechanic to fix it.
A quest notification appeared in my vision, popping itself into a folder. This was almost identical to the first part of the Fix the Gazebo quest over at Charnel. The only difference was, these guys didn't want to abandon their city. I wondered if all the small, race-specific towns had gazebos that were out of order. Now that both Clara and I were high enough level to obtain and cast Teleport, I spent some time reading the complicated description for the otherwise simple spell. At level 1, I could transport myself and my familiar from one travel node to any other active travel node that I'd already visited sometime in the game. So far, the only active one I'd seen was the one in the center of Medina. At level 2, I could transport myself and Banksy to any travel node I'd visited, plus to any location to which I held a brand, whether there was a travel node or not. I wouldn't be able to zap my way out, though, so that could get sticky. At level 3, I could transport large groups and access branded locations as long as one of my party held the brand. I would need to have Teleport level 3 to complete the Charnel quest. At the top level of 4, I didn't require a node to jump out as long as I wasn't inside of a population center. I still needed to teleport to either a branded place or a travel node. However, it could be a travel node I'd never visited before. I suspected level 4 was required to visit some of the hidden areas of this world. Level 1 cost 1 skill point, level 2 cost 2, level 3 cost 5 and required player level 15, and level 4 cost a whopping 10 skill points and required me to be level 25. That last level also required a bionic upgrade. The moment I'd turned level 13, both Clara and I gave ourselves the first level of teleport. If we happened to run across an active node, we'd be able to zap ourselves to Medina. We approached the silver buildings, coming to a stop outside the apothecary. It appeared these buildings were built out of old, discarded steam boilers. A jagged tear bulged out of the side of the potion shop, and the metallic top curled back where it was pressed against the ceiling of the cavern. I reached out and wrapped the side of the structure. The metallic wall was warmer than I'd expected. A stooped, round doorway was cut into the side. The sign above read, "Potions for His Glory."
Maybe I should go in alone. I'll probably get a better price.
I opened my mouth to protest, but then I changed my mind. She was right. We wouldn't be able to do it next door at the Fleshmodder, but my presence only seemed to make things worse. Okay. Remember, that Stolas guy sells them for 250,000 teeth, so don't settle for anything ridiculously low. She nodded and pushed her way into the shop. Banksy and I waited outside along with Madame Throb, who glared at us. Groups of robed groundlings walked past on the street, giving us a wide berth. Some muttered under their breath, others made a flicking motion with their right hands, which I took for an obscene gesture. So, have you had much trouble from the demons?
What is that supposed to mean? Is that a threat?
No, it's just that nearby town of the Lycan people was leveled, and Medina is under siege, and Charnel is under constant attack.
Well, unlike those poorly defended above-ground death traps, you can see...
And stay out!
Jesus, asshole, you could have just said no thank you!
So, how'd the negotiations go? Clara stood straighter. She held one of the Colo Colo Mensis potions in her hand, and she shoved it into her pack.
So, remember when I told you that I thought Colo Colo might be the guardian of the Shade Gremlins? Turns out they hate her even more.
Son of a bitch. If we didn't have anything to sell, what could we do? The only other items either of us had of value were our weapons and maybe my leather jerkin, and selling any of that stuff was a bad idea. We were going to have to leave and find another town. The next closest settlement that wasn't destroyed was a place called Ilth, home to the goat-headed viceroys. Well, I guess we should at least try next door and see how much a brand costs. Maybe we'll get lucky. The sign above this shop read, "Glory to Moritasgus Upgrades and Flesh Mods, a division of Chicken and Waffles and Upgrades LLC." Underneath, in hand-painted letters, was, "No food at this location." And underneath that was the crossed-out, "No leechers allowed." In fresher paint was one more line, "No shade gremlins allowed." The place wasn't open, but Madam Throb insisted they'd be here at any moment. "Hey, Throb? So why do you guys hate shade gremlins?" I pointed to the sign. "And why don't you hate leechers anymore?"
"Elytra recently helped us build our temple. As a result, we no longer hate their kind. A shade gremlin visiting Kinnegad made the pronouncement that Kolo Kolo could defeat Moritasgus in battle. So we now hate them."
I exchanged a look with Clara. "You're painting with a bit of a broad brush, don't you think? Just because one of a certain race does something doesn't mean that all of them are bad." Madam Throb just looked at me like I was something stuck on her foot. A thought occurred to me. "Hey, who played the leecher character anyway? Do you remember?" A leecher was a tall, robed humanoid creature with the oblong head of an octopus and 5 or 6 tentacle-like appendages on its face. They used technology and resurrection magics, if I recalled correctly.
"Yeah, it was Frank."
"Huh. What about a shade gremlin?"
"I don't remember. I think it was a consumable. I know the Canadian played one last season before he switched to a lichen."
"You said Frank didn't like playing with non-humans. But you also said he was one of the ones who helped complete the game last season. Do you think he had anything to do with this?"
"Probably. He wanted his consumables to be human. But he did play the game itself, completing quests, leveling up, and all that. He collected artifacts. I don't see how this matters. Frank is gone."
A male and female groundling pair walked up to the entrance as we waited. Both were dressed in silver robes and wore odd caps made of brass. The hats looked like shower caps, but with the sharp V of a widow's peak over the forehead. It gave the two groundlings the appearance of alien little people from some 1950s B-movie. The man looked at us and smiled broadly. The woman glared at me with open contempt. Over the man's head was,
"Stonegate, advanced bionics mechanic, level 31.
"Customers?"
Stonegate stood a couple hands shorter than Clara, barely coming up to my waist. He produced a big key.
"Come in. Come in."
The door creaked open, a warm, inviting light coming from the interior. He bound inside. The woman's title was
Jazz, flesh modder. Level 37.
She stopped in the doorway, blocking it.
"You got money?"
Jazz looked me up and down.
"You look like someone who doesn't have much money."
I have money. It wasn't quite a lie.
"What about brand irons? You got iron?" "I ain't got a Medina brand, if that's what you're looking for. I only have a Kinnegad one. And I sure as hell ain't sticking your kind with one of those."
We do." She glared at me for a few more moments, then turned and went inside.
"I will wait here for you."
"I'll do the negotiating."
"Yeah, because that went so well in the last place."
"That guy would have melted your face off if you'd tried."
She was probably right. The moment we stepped inside, the musty stench of Kinnegad disappeared, replaced with the equally nauseating stench of rotting bandages and spilled iodine. The cramped, round building consisted of a white dentist chair on one side of the room and a wood-burning stove on the other. A simple loft hung about halfway up. I caught sight of a pair of eyes watching us from above. A child groundling, about 5 or 6. I couldn't tell their gender. The kid didn't have a name tag. I waved. The child's eyes grew wide, and they disappeared into the loft. Stonegate came to stand by the dentist's chair, and the woman named Jazz stood by the hearth.
What sort of upgrades are you looking for today?
Stonegate leaned up against a small table next to the dentist's chair. Several tools clattered as he nudged the table. The tools weren't very clean. In fact, some looked rusty. Others were covered with blood. I swallowed.
I see all three of you are level 13. Well, there isn't anything available for your hook slayer. Both of you have several skill points available. 15 and 5. Can I interest you in a grappling hook?
He waved his left hand, pointed it at the ceiling.
They're very cool. For a fae as beautiful as you, I can install an equally beautiful pair of wings. I can have you soaring the clouds in no time. Or would you like carnival teeth?
He gnashed his dull gray teeth at her.
It's one of the deadliest melee weapons for your kind. Expensive, but it's very worth it.
He patted his chair.
It'd only take a few minutes.
How much to upgrade my mapping skill?
I'm negotiating, remember?
Let's see here. Oh, yes. You have a mapping skill of 3. To upgrade to 4? Yes, that would be useful, wouldn't it? It adds additional points of interest and threat assessments. It also adds interior maps of walled towns. You'd always be able to find your way back here, but it requires some brain surgery. Nothing major. It would be 2 skill points and 1,000 teeth.
My heart sank. How much for the grappling hook?
That one is easy.
Stonegate picked a bloody, rusty saw up from the table and made a cutting motion in the air. He had a wild look in his eye, making his enthusiasm suddenly seem sinister.
That's basically a snip and tuck. Plug and play. It's 5 skill points and 500 teeth. I'd recommend you bring it up to level 3, though. That'd be an additional 6 points and another 3,000 teeth. It strengthens the hook, allows attachments, and makes it a weapon. At the first level, it's nothing more than a glorified rope.
We're actually here for brands.
Clara turned to the scowling woman.
We hold a brand for the town of Charnel, and all 3 of us would like one. On our necks.
The hook slayer is free. It will be his first brand. Both of you already have neck brands. You can only have 2 neck ones. It's recommended you use at least 1 for your associated kaiju. But it's your body. I can put them on your chest. It's possible to lose them in that area, but very unlikely. It'll be your 2nd brand for both of you. It'll be 100 for the fae, and 300 for the worm surgeon.
What? Why am I 3 times as much?
Because you're Tala. Also because you're a demon-worshipping son of a zombie whore who I wouldn't piss on to save even if you and your entire filthy race of heathens were on fire.
But...
And that 300 price is not negotiable. So don't even try. You've already brought your wretched stench into this house. And it will take at least 300 teeth to have the clerics cleanse it.
We were 75 teeth short.
Can I negotiate? We're a bit scant, and all 3 of us really need that brand. And the sooner you do it, the sooner we'll leave town.
I don't see what you can offer me.
I'll tell you what. You brand him for 300 teeth, Banksy for nothing, and me for 25. That'll clean out our money, leaving us destitute. But you and your husband can beat the crap out of Duke here, and he won't fight back.
A wide grin spread across Jazz's face. She looked back and forth between us.
Now this lady knows how to negotiate.
She looked me up and down.
Can we use sticks?
Wait a second.
I get the top half, and you get the bottom half. It'll be like when we were kids, back before they let the ghouls back in the city.
Clara was looking up at the loft where the child groundling had reappeared. She gave me an odd, apologetic look.
Actually, I'll tell you what. Is your child yet an adept?
No. The invasion came, and we have been trapped here. They had some demons in cages, but they have long since been amplified.
He looked at me, then turned to his wife.
Would he work for this?
It's okay.
Jazz was looking me up and down. She stepped forward and grabbed my hand, examining my fingers.
He's no demon, but he is a ghoul. Still meets the requirement.
You will give us all the teeth you have. Throw in the wings, grappling hook up to level 3, and mapping upgrade for Duke. And instead of you beating him, I'll allow your child to sacrament before your temple. When is the next Hedora?
It is in 2 days.
Jazz looked up at the loft.
You would do this? You would submit him to an amplification?
Yes.
A single tear traced a path down Jazz's face. What the hell?
We can do the upgrades, but you still have to spend the skill points. It would cost 13 of his 15 points. For you, the wings will take all 5 of your points. We have about 5,000 teeth saved up, but they're all yours. It's a miracle, darling.
Wait. What is happening? What does sacrament me mean? And what the hell is Hedora? Clara refused to look me in the eye. How did she know about any of this?
I'll explain later. Okay, you have to do the brands first, then the surgeries.
We shake on this.
Stonegate stepped toward me, holding out his hand. Hesitantly, I took it.
New debt incurred.
The notification disappeared into a folder. I looked at Clara, who had a terrifying look of apology on her face.